I think the real misnomer is that people believe that just because it's end of life for that company doesn't mean it has to be the end of life for the goods. So we focus on taking those new goods and giving them this really a second life in what is a market that really needs that infusion of supply because the demand is so high. So we love to see ourselves as not only doing good, but also providing that logistics break for the companies who are making that conscious choice to place goods with us, because it is such a financial benefit. Why would you take a loss or liquidate when we can offer you such a positive tax incentive?
Thanks for joining us today on the Real Finds podcast. Today, we welcome Emily Petway, founder of Given Kind, one of the region's fastest growing nonprofits that harnesses the value of end-of-life products to support almost 200 local charities. On the podcast, we discuss reverse logistics, gaps in the supply chain, and the power of end-of-life product donation over other traditional liquidation methods. If you're a decision maker looking to clear your warehouse and recapture value, this podcast is well worth a listen. Emily, thanks for hopping on the podcast today.
Thanks for the introduction.
So one of the things that we like to start off is let you introduce yourself a little bit, because I think you know more about yourself than anybody does.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So I am Emily Petway. My current role is that I'm the founder and executive director of Given Kind. We are a unique nonprofit that takes in goods, rescues them from the economy, and places them with nonprofit organizations throughout the Chicagoland area. And I've gotten to the position that I'm in now after founding the organization through, of course, as many people have, sort of an unconventional approach, where growing up in a family business, pursued a career in education for a number of years, and now found myself through seeking different opportunities and trying to solve problems in the role of a founder and an executive director for this organization, Given Kind.
Well, I know you always like to talk of yourself as an unconventional path towards serving others, but I had a long conversation with your mother.
Last week.
And you've had a long tradition of service in general. So I'm curious, what got you hooked at serving others and kind of helping the community?
Oh my gosh. Well, thanks, Gordon. And I'm sure that conversation, you know, whenever you talk to someone's mom, it's no one's a better salesperson than your parent is. So thanks, Mom. I really do thank my parents, because that's really, I guess, how I got my start, is that, you know, growing up, not unlike yourself, where there's a family business contact. My dad was in the form, feel, and seal business and packaging. So we did a lot of hotel amenities, was a bulk of what we did for places like Dial and such. And we would have always, in any kind of manufacturing production, there's surplus or there's a trial run, or there's things where the film is off or the coat is off and they can't enter the traditional consumer stream. So what do you do with those extras? It became fun for me to set up in my basement, sort of like a free convenience store for my neighbors to come in to get things like shaving cream and shampoo and conditioner. But there was also a time when we realized there was even more than our neighborhood could handle. So we would take cases of it to what's now the Zachariah Center in Gurnee. And that's a place where women who were struggling and needed a fresh start could have the basic necessities. And that always stuck with me, that we saw we had surplus and that there was a need to be filled. So from a very early age, that was pretty formative and it stuck with me. And with my mom being a teacher and myself being very fortunate to be influenced by so many amazing educators, that to me was a path I wanted to follow. So I was teaching high school band. I was a high school band director, and I had a student who I knew was working to pay for her family's electric bill. And I said, "Amanda, are you going to prom this year?" And she said, "No." I said, "Girl, is it the ticket? Do you need help with the ticket?" She says, "No, it's the dress." So from that, I thought, I need to start a prom dress bank for my students. And that right there is when I discovered how much more a nonprofit needs than what's really obvious to the community. And you could imagine a prom dress bank needs dresses. It needs probably accessories or shoes. But to my surprise, and to our budget's surprise, it was the other outline items that were off the radar. Like we needed a vacuum cleaner, post-it notes. We needed at one point a lawnmower, of all things. A prom dress bank needed a lawnmower to keep up our space so we could keep our donated facility. And that's where, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. That's where we found that we were spending so much time trying to find the items that were needed to keep going and to fulfill our mission. And that's where the idea of Giving Kind was born, where there had to be a way to take items that were being let go of or in the wrong place at the wrong time for companies and connect them to organizations like the prom dress bank I was running at Becca's Closet at the time that was essential to the continuation and the outreach of our mission.
So we've gotten into Giving Kind.
Yeah.
So for anybody who's listening who's not familiar, what is Giving Kind?
Giving Kind is a unique logistics link between companies that have surplus goods and nonprofits who are using them to fulfill their mission and impact the community. To me, it's amazing. And I think would be amazing, probably known to even some of your listeners too, that companies have to let go of goods for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
And it could be promotional items, seasonal, packaging changes, canceled orders. I mean, the list goes on and on. That's why the reverse logistics industry is so large. We're talking like in $1 trillion of large annually. And there's been such a large shift from something that's a linear reverse logistics stream to really a circular reverse logistics stream. So we are a part of that, infusing the goods back into being useful rather than companies being forced with the only options of burning it or burying it or sending it off for liquidation. Donation is a really socially and environmentally and quite honestly, bottom line, responsibly charged option for them.
Yeah, and I'd like to double back on that. We certainly have listeners in the audience that are involved in reverse logistics.
Right.
There's really two types, right, of reverse logistics. You have your reverse logistics that maybe it's a good that's, you know, traditionally reusable in the market, but there's also a ton of goods that aren't. And I think that's what Giving Kind really does an amazing job at. If you could talk a little bit more about that, because I think a lot of people don't understand that there's so many goods that companies can't put out for a variety of reasons, and right. There's such a need.
There's such a need, and that's why, like you were saying, and I'm thankful for the accolades, but it's really what we also feel should be our strongest suit. Not doing direct services, we want to make our logistics operations really not just with a lot of heart, but with a lot of smart. So we do see that companies are forced with these decisions, mostly because it's financially charged, that you have goods that can't go back into the stream because seasonality or a conflict with marketing where, you know, we have one really well-known product that just changed the color of packaging and you just can't use that package anymore, but the product itself is fine. I think the real misnomer is that people believe that just because it's end of life for that company doesn't mean it has to be the end of life for the goods. So we focus on taking those new goods and giving them this really a second life in what is a market that really needs that infusion of supply because the demand is so high. So we love to see ourselves as not only doing good, but also providing that logistics break for the companies who are making that conscious choice to place goods with us, because it is such a financial benefit. Why would you take a loss or liquidate when we can offer you such a positive tax incentive to participating in this type of giving?
So can you talk a little bit more about that? Because I think a lot of people, particularly even some small business people who maybe aren't CPAs or
sure.
tax lawyers, you don't always understand that, like, sometimes giving can be financially receiving under the tax code. How does that kind of play out with GiveAcare?
Well, I want to be careful to not overbill myself as someone who's a tax expert, because it's really, you have to consult with your tax professional. And there's... Right. I want to make sure, because it really is custom for each organization, knowing their books and what benefit that is, depending on where you are, what you've got, and what you're giving, that there is... there's different benefits to it. So I won't quote numbers, but there are a number of studies out there that you can reference. The University of Indiana did a really interesting one that talks about the benefits of giving, that it is such a positive financial choice for so many that just goes overlooked. And that's not even to mention also the social capital that's gained. There are so many companies out there that are doing... running their own campaigns based off of the social impact they're making. And what a great way to jump in on that, because people are paying attention. Your consumers now are choosing companies who do make socially conscious decisions like this. And what a great way to enter the game by taking goods that you are considering to be an end of life and almost a burden in a way, and using that as a reinvestment in your brand and in the community at the same time.
Oh, yeah. And I think one of the biggest things is there's so many hotly contested aspects of life these days, being socially conscious. And
right.
So many of the charities that you give to are things like the Illinois Food Bank.
And, yeah.
Charities that literally every consumer is going to sit there and say, wow, I'm so proud that, you know, somebody partnered with, I don't know if I can name drop this, but Walgreens or some of the companies.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know that their goods are going to a cause that everyone can be happy about at the end of the day.
We're really proud of the work that we do. We're fortunate to partner with over 550 nonprofit partners just in Illinois alone. We get to see those partners come in and we interact with them. We know the work that they're doing, and we're just so excited to think that those items are getting to serve the community in a whole new way. And we feel that our corporate partners are proud of that work too. We love reporting the stories of impact, and it's another way for the companies to have that community investment, also recharge their company workers and on their teams so that they can really feel that it's not just stuff anymore, it's serving a purpose. So we love that added value add too.
So I know we've mentioned a lot about value add, but one of the things I'm fascinated by, because I've taken a couple strolls through your warehouses, there's some very interesting goods that get donated. So what are some of the craziest or out there goods that you've received in the last couple?
Oh my gosh, I love this topic. I'm so glad you've asked, because I think, again, kind of like the prom dress bank needing a lawnmower, I think there is maybe not a thorough understanding of how resourceful nonprofits are. And I want to put the call out before I tell stories of specific items, that it really, you wouldn't, nonprofits are the most imaginative. I want to use the word scrappy, but it just seems it doesn't, it kind of like undervalues it. I would say filled with ingenuity and creativity and are real problem solvers. If you've got an item that's new of quality, nonprofits are going to find a way to use it. So we've been able to see items that, yes, of course, we have basic needs goods. It's really easy to imagine how Vessi shoes that are 100% waterproof could benefit a refugee population. And that's where it's obvious that a thing has become a tool. But you know, we've had Walgreens, like you mentioned, one of our largest donors of goods. They had like press-on nails. And you're like, oh my gosh, what could an organization do with press-on nails? We're not rescuing anyone from a fire. There isn't an animal who needs its shots. What are we doing here with press-on nails? But, you know, we had the Palatine Senior Center come in, and the nails went to provide personal care sessions for residents that they have there. Like, so sometimes it's not an immediate, urgent, disaster-type situation, but it's a quality of life and showing demonstration of care that has taken something that might have been a little off the radar and moved it into a real purpose. So I think press on nails would be my, you know, an example of something that might not be your traditional basic need that comes to mind, but is definitely added value for the community and, you know, hopefully for Walgreens too, to understand how their goods are being used.
Well, quality of life does matter. I wanted to talk a little bit about quality then of like kind of the goods that you bring in. Would you say that one of your, aspects is kind of sorting for quality or sorting for what do you go through with this sorting process when goods come in?
We're so fortunate that the partners that we have, like ShipBob, again, not to mention Walgreens so much, but they are really fantastic at it. And I think such a leader in reverse logistics and giving, but also Dick's Sporting Goods, they understand that they are giving these items as a gift. So the items we're receiving are really great. It does take a lot of touch points for us to always understand, if some boxes are mixed. So we make sure we check them for quality, for sorting them so they can be best used by organizations. So there are a lot of touch points that we have just to make sure we have an understanding and have categorized it in a way that it's consumable by our partners. So it really truly is like, it's not like a logistics organization. It is one. And so we put a lot of thought into how we can train volunteers and our team members to process and prepare the goods. So there is a lot of eyes on items, a lot of counting, and a lot of accountability that comes with it.
So I've definitely heard you talk before about process.
Yeah.
What is that process of intaking and kind of training volunteers? Because there are people that work in the reverse logistics group, and some of which that are clients of mine, that do less end of life for goods.
Right.
It takes a lot to onboard somebody. So how are you onboarding volunteers through the process?
That's a good question. And the answer is different for every donation we receive. We try to create a process that's repeatable. And when we see something that we've received before, we're thrilled. But unlike the for-profit land it's really much like for-profit folks that are receiving such a large quantity of SKUs, you're having to treat your items differently. And so we're trying to automate and trying to replicate what we can, but knowing that flexibility is paramount. So we drill it down to the most basic level, and it's a filtration process. So we have a process that's repeatable by our volunteers. We check it, and then we're able to put it up on our catalog so nonprofits can see what we have. So we have a whole system depending upon whom the vendor is and what we've received. And within certain genres like apparel or within personal health care, we treat the categories differently based off of what we're getting in.
So I know we've talked a lot about what you're getting in, and one of the big processes that you've talked about is what companies get out of it. And one of the things that companies are worried about is their environmental footprint these days.
Right.
So why would a company give you goods under this whole concept of trying to be environmentally friendly? Why not just...
That's a great question.
You know, are there... What's the methodology behind that?
Well, ESG, the environmentally social governance, it's coming. It's really prevalent in so many other countries. And I think that it's becoming, the earth is shaking, and we're all getting the understanding in the States that is something that's, you can start early adopting now because these rules and regulations are coming. And we would love to offer the flexibility of being able to try that out with us early on so that we can grow together. But we really feel that the immediacy of what we're able to do, how quick we are able to respond and how fast we can come pick up goods provides that escape from when you know, usually when items are coming to that end of life and you know they need to leave your warehouse, they need to leave it now. And how fast we can move, because we've seen such variety before, we're able to be pretty responsive. And we feel that that's an added value to this environmental piece, because if you need it gone yesterday and we can be there, we feel that you're much less likely to have it see a landfill or an incinerator. So that's what we try to add to.
I mean, you don't have to drive along an industrial park or drive around an industrial park very long to see a tremendous amount of goods that either can't get disposed fast enough,
right,
or in dumpsters, because it's such a tight industrial market still, and there's not, right, space. So
I love talking to you about space, because no one understands that better than you do. Really, like, space is in industrial, yeah, especially of course there are items that have a value to it, but the very space that they're taking up per pallet is also a cost. So we're talking to a vendor who was storing 14 pallets of socks,
yeah,
and it was costing them $100 a day. Yeah. And so their choice is, I could burn it or I could donate it.
Yeah.
And we're so grateful when they make the second choice, because we feel that we, again, are able to be there so quickly. And we know, with hundreds of partners and socks being such a highly needed item, that those are going to be on the feet of someone in need very quickly.
So how do you go about that process of moving goods? Because,
right,
I know we worked hard to place you in a great warehouse.
Oh, but, thank you.
But, you know, you don't have unlimited space. Yeah. And you have a lot of need and a lot of demand. How do you go through and move goods out to non-for-profits?
Right.
That's
a really great question. And our warehouse friends who are listening at Giving Kind, I'm sure would love me to move it out even faster. But, you know, we did move last year $10 million worth of goods, and we've only been in our new facility, which increased our capacity by over 90%. We've only been there for 4 months. So we know the sky is much bluer and the ceiling is much higher now that we're in this fabulous new place that you helped us find. So we're so very grateful. And we look forward to doing even a larger capacity piece this year. But we've found that the answer for us is making sure we understand the goods that are coming in, our process of sorting them and making visible to our nonprofit partners is key. And then the last piece is finding nonprofit partners who need what we have. So we're working on all of those fronts and recruiting more corporate partners who have items to give. We're constantly refining our filtration process and posting those items so nonprofits can see what we have, increasing our accuracy piece, and then finding organizations who put them to good use. I mean, there's 72,000 nonprofits in Illinois. That's a lot of organizations and a lot of need, a lot of creativity for how problems are being solved in the community. And we feel we have something to offer.
And so how do you go about that process of finding someone to offer those goods to, or do people, yeah, seek you out? How do you work that process?
There's a little field of dreams in it. Like, if you build it, they will come. But you have basically solid. I'm so happy baseball season is back. It is a little bit of, if you have what people need, they find you. But, you know, it's like any business out there. How many times have you said, like, oh, I'm from Van Vlissingen, and people are like, oh, I know who you are. And you're like, score. That's how we feel too. It's all about visibility and sharing the service you provide. And we just can't say it enough. We go to networking events, we go to conferences, we send out newsletters. We do all that we can to increase the visibility of our mission, because that's how people get goods. So, and having good goods, having good goods is also makes a huge difference. So that's really what we feel the winning combination is.
So I know we're going to talk more in the podcast about making a difference, but we're going to get to our final four.
Okay. Final four.
And the final four, it's kind of a great place to wrap up and learn a little bit more about you,
okay,
a little bit more about your organization, and then also learn a little bit more about kind of where things are going. And so the first thing I wanted to talk about is where things are going. And
right.
So in terms of where do you see the non-for-profit sector going 10 years out from here? Because you're, I think, one of the best voices to answer this question, because not only are you a non-for-profit, but you work with so many other non-for-profits in Illinois. So I think you have unique insight into it.
Oh, thanks. Gee, Gordon, thank you. I feel privileged to be able to have an organization and be a part of a mission that we do see a lot of foot traffic of nonprofit professionals that walk through our door. And I know I can't speak for them, but what I'm seeing so much more of is such a solid advocacy piece that I think it used to be that you would have a mission, and if people were interested, they would come through your doors and you would do good things together. I see nonprofits speaking up for what they need, going after what is going to help their mission grow, and trying to be more embedded in the communities they're serving to really listen to what the need is. There's so much noise in all of the different streams that we consume media. There's a lot. It's like drinking water through a fire hose. It's just coming at you so quickly. And I find our nonprofits, if they're really centering themselves and thinking about what they need to serve their mission and then going after it a little bit more pointedly, I see that nonprofit, social enterprise, thinking more like for-profit businesses, and I see a meld of the two coming together and a lot more moving forward in the same sort of thoughtful, prioritized vein. I see a lot more focus is what I see.
And do you think that's niching down, or where do you think that focus is primarily going to be going forward?
I think that there's so many different ways problems are being solved in the nonprofit sector. So I love that there's a focus for animal welfare. I love that there's a focus for housing insecurity. And if you look through the lens of each of those, I see the focus getting clearer for so many of them. But I love that you have to look through the different lenses to see it. And I hope it stays that way in a way. There isn't one large nonprofit conglomerate that we're all finding how we can benefit the community. And we call upon each other when their expertise is needed. I think that that's what I see because that's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm hopeful that we can get better at what we do in order to bolster each other up. But I'd like to believe that that's where we're moving.
I think that's where we're moving in a lot of the world, be it the non or for-profit sector, because expertise and really niching down is so important in today's flat, internet, globally driven world. One of the things that we'd like to do is take a step back maybe before, that crazy globally driven flat world and go a little bit back in time to young Emily. So going through the process, we have a lot of, I'd say, younger-ish listeners to the podcast, a lot of younger people in the business community in their 20s and 30s. And if you could step back into your 20s and 30s, and I know you're,
I will go back in my time machine. I'm very comfortable and I'm glad. I'm glad to be in the time period I am now.
If you could go back just a little bit and talk about what it was like then to kind of figure out your path in life. I think there's a lot of people looking to make a difference and they don't necessarily know how to take that first step. What would be your advice?
I think that my advice to looking back and also seeing what I found value in might be something different than what someone else sees value in. And I think that's beautiful. So I would say, how do you want to help? I think I would look for two things. I would look for, not to steal, this is wild, but there's like a Mr. Rogers quote about looking for the helpers in a situation. So I think modeling off of what you see someone doing that is positive, that seems to resonate with you. If you don't feel you have an answer, but you see what someone else is doing and you're like, I think that I want to do that, or that makes sense to me, I would emulate those people. And if you have a passion and you just don't know where to get started, I would encourage people to start small. That any act of kindness is an act of kindness. And if you find yourself wanting to do more of those, and if you want to find yourself doing more of those in an organized way, that there are opportunities are endless and boundless. And I would encourage you to to start where you're at and grow and then find other people who are doing that same thing?
Well, I'm never going to attack Fred Rogers. He was a beloved member of my childhood.
It was really great. It was like profound in a way when you really think about the message he was trying to share. It's just kind of timeless.
Yeah. And so one of the ways we find timeless advice is through books.
Right.
And so we usually get a lot of business books on the podcast.
Yeah.
So I was saying, maybe let's take a step away from business books.
Okay.
Is there a book that's inspired you in your passion for giving and service?
In my passion for giving and service, you know, I would say that one of my favorite books is like about adversity. It's a really difficult book. It's a fictional book, but I love A Thousand Splendid Suns. I love the book, and I love about staying true to finding yourself and being true to that amongst really awful adversity. I think just made me think a lot about that. And I just think it's of course, really difficult topic, but really interesting. And I just think it makes people reflect when you look at someone else's life through their eyes. I just find that to be, even if it's a fictional character, something that's interesting and thought-provoking.
I think difficulty is truly inspiring. I know Viktor Frankl's book has really inspired me.
Oh, really?
Just the whole idea of pursuit of meaning and like really focusing on it through difficulty. I can't say enough, even fiction or nonfiction. I think it's really an important aspect of, you know, what we pursue. And what we're really pursuing on the podcast ultimately is
lovely.
Trying to find the next person we have on.
And yeah.
You've been great.
And oh, thanks.
We're going to bring you on again. But if there's a voice that we could reach out to have on the podcast next, who would it be?
I'm very fortunate, again, that I'm surrounded by people who, talking about adversity, I mean, mention a book that I read, but really hearing the stories of people who've started organizations that are grassroots, who are, again, solving problems in very unique ways all across the sector. Those are stories are really inspiring. And although they haven't written books, hearing that and learning from that has been really inspiring. I think the person that sticks out in my mind right now is Senator Adrienne Johnson. She has been a wonderful champion of our organization. And through that connection, I've gotten to know her a little bit more. And I think that she is a really excellent listener. And because of that, it causes her to think thoughtfully about the change that she can speak up for and the change that she can help create. And I think that she takes that responsibility really seriously. And there's something, again, about the watching her think through a process that makes me think about, oh my gosh, what am I not seeing, or which more should I be thinking about? Because she does take such gravity and has such levity when it comes to those things. So I would recommend Senator Adrienne Johnson.
She's in the building. So I'll have to reach out to her. She's difficult to get this time of
year. I know.
Because we're starting to ramp up for political season.
I know.
Maybe when things wind down after political season, we'll be able to catch her. In terms of there's one more question though that I think is really particularly important. And for you, I think it's multifaceted. And it's if there's somebody first who's in the non-for-profit sector and wants to reach out, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Please reach out. You can find us on our website. It's given, G-I-V-E-N, kind.org. And you can also reach out to me at emily@givenkind.org. That's the fastest way, through email. I love hearing stories about how people are solving problems, and also if we can help solve a problem space-wise or logistically, or you feel like you have an item to contribute or truckloads to contribute, any way that we can help facilitate giving to match your giving goals is really something we want to be a part of. So Thank you.
And the second thing is for volunteers, because I know you guys need volunteers.
What's the best way
to reach out?
Same way, you can reach out through givenkind.org. If under the get involved, we have a nice volunteer explanation of what the tasks are and how we're looking for help. But again, that email, I love connecting with people at emily@givenkind.org.
Emily, thank you so much for hopping on the podcast today.
Thanks, Gordon. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Emily. If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a like, comment, and subscription. We truly appreciate your interactions, subscriptions, and reviews. They continue to help us get quality guests. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gordon Lanphier with the Real Finds Podcast. Thank you for listening.